Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to All Things WordPress and WooCommerce, a Do the Woo podcast show. This show is brought to you by OmniSend, the solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops and your own website and Hostinger. Whether you're building a WordPress site or specifically a Woo store, their infrastructure brings your client site speed, uptime, and security. I'll tell you more about our sponsors later in the show, but let's dive into today's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Emerging Tech on Do the Woo. I'm your host, Dave Lockie, and with me today is Aaron Edwards from DocSpot AI. Hi, Aaron. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, David?
It's been a while, isn't it?
Yeah, it has.
We had some collaboration back with the WAPU NST stuff and the Web3 WP, which I guess is like three, four years ago now, something like that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, probably about 3 years. Wow.
Time's flown. And I guess you followed, and I guess we'll go back and do kind of a quick intro to you. But so we last crossed paths and collaborated before all this ChatGPT stuff really came into the mainstream. And you obviously followed that advice of if you're in crypto, pivot to AI. So I'm curious to hear that part of the story, but maybe you could just give us a kind of intro to you and how you came to be here today.
Yeah, sure. Well, my name is Aaron Edwards, as you said, and I've been in kind of the WordPress world for, gosh, that's like 2007, 2008, back in WordPress 2.6, I think, the first one that looked a little bit pretty. And I kind of started there just building my own like multi-site. Back then it was called WordPress MU, multi-user, now multi-site, and was hosting my own there and started learning how to do plugin development and things like that. And then became a developer at WPMU Dev for a little while and eventually raised up to CTO and served there for, gosh, a long time, like 13 years or something as CTO at WPMU Dev. So lots of experience in the WordPress world and building things. But ultimately, my favorite thing is always like building with new technology. Whatever the new thing is, I love like figuring out how to do practical things with it, how to transform that into products that users love. And so like even like Web3, I'm still fascinated by Web3. I know kind of the shine and luster and stuff is off of it right now, at least, but I still believe in it. But, but yeah, learning how to do like smart contract development and things like that and experimenting with doing projects that could like use Web3 with WordPress. And that's where we first met. And yeah, so as like AI stuff was starting to go, like I started actually like learning about that back when it was like deep learning and neural networks were the first things and learning how to do stuff with that. And then this whole like generative AI thing, as that came out, I was like, I am not missing a new technology wave. You know, I'm going to be at the forefront and be experimenting, be trying the new stuff, seeing what I can build with it. And that's what I've been doing. I built a bunch of kind of experiments and one of them especially took off, and that's DocSpot AI. And now that's my full-time job as a entrepreneur. I'm running that and growing that and building new features and things for that.
So thank you for that. And I love that intersection. I think there's this thing that people in technology, that this behavior that I find weird, which is that if you're working in technology, then you like really the onus is on you to keep up with what technology is doing. Like the nature of working technology is working with change. And so when I see people who are kind of either resistant to change or seem entrenched in the technology world as it is today, it always confuses me. And so, yeah, I definitely share your passion of trying to figure out what's coming and marrying that to whatever sort of technology one cares about, which I think in our case is both WordPress. That's what feels like home for us.
Yeah, it is funny how people can be like so pessimistic. It's kind of like the thing they say, the best music for any person is what they listen to in high school. you know, it doesn't like change. I think it's kind of the same with technology. Like maybe it's part of human nature is we just don't like change or uncomfortable with change, you know? But like I tell my kids this all the time, like you need to learn how to learn. That's the most important thing, like to survive in the world is things are always changing and they're going to be changing faster and faster. And the most important skill that you can learn is how to learn, how to constantly be learning. And technology, for me, I'm lucky that's fun for me, you know? And I love learning by getting my hands dirty and actually like building things and trying out some of this new stuff and seeing what can be done. And so far that's worked out for me well in my career and things like that.
So tell me, how many experiments roughly did you run? So presumably this is whilst you were still CTOing WPM UDev. Like how many experiments that kind of at least got to some sort of like public release did you run before you hit DocSpot?
Yeah. Well, kind of the first thing I built was like, I just love like cloud technology. And so like we built a lot of products that were kind of for WordPress that were cloud hosted at WPM UDev, like our Smush image compression plugin or like the hub for managing lots of WordPress sites, all kinds of different things like that. So I got to scratch that itch there as CTO. And of course, like manage hosting and things like that. The first kind of project that I built with a friend of mine, Josh Daly, was Infinite Uploads, which is like a cloud storage plugin for WordPress. And I still actually own that. So it was kind of like the first foray. But as this whole like AI movement came out, I was following it very closely. And so when GPT-3, like they first started giving like, people don't remember this because it's just such like, it's moving so fast now, but OpenAI was so restrictive about like giving access to these models. Like they're so afraid of the damage it can do and things like that. So you had to like know someone in Silicon Valley to get access to the API for GPT-3. It was hard, you know? And so I had actually looked at it as like, I'm going to make like the first like copywriting plugin for WordPress, you know, because I see where this is going. And back then it wasn't like these models, they weren't instruction tuned like ChatGPT. It was, you had to do some really careful like prompt crafting because you would like input like a string and then it would continue that string. So it definitely took a lot more skill to use these APIs and to get good output. And so like I was really trying for that and actually like started building the plugin, all this stuff, but I could not get access. I get no matter who I pinged on Twitter, I could not get access. And then probably like right when I did finally get access to the API, then Bertha came out. I don't know if you're familiar with that WordPress plugin for AI. Andrew, he's a good guy. And Vito, I think, is co-founder of that, Vito Peleg.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like the first like big like AI copywriting plugin for WordPress. I was like, oh man, I missed it. You know, not that I did. I mean, there's plenty of room for that kind of stuff. But now I'm
you weren't the only one that saw this.
Yeah. Now I'm glad that I'm not in that space because, gosh, it has gotten crowded since ChatGPT and stuff became so widespread to everyone. So kind of my first thing was like, and then the other thing I was like, well, images. You know, when DALL-E was first like announced from OpenAI, and there was the same thing with them. They're very restrictive. They're afraid of the damage it could do, you know? And so I was like, I'm just going to be ready. Like as soon as that becomes available, I want to be there to build a product with that or whatever. And so I was actually following very closely, like the kind of secret Reddit societies that were following Stable Diffusion, which was kind of the first like open source image generative AI model. And following that really closely and things like that. And so I was there, I was ready, like the day the weights became available for that to be like, all right, I'm gonna launch something. And so I created like a WordPress plugin and first just shared like a demo on Twitter, like how you could generate images in the WordPress admin. It was actually like a Gutenberg block that I created to do that. And that kind of went viral on Twitter because that was the first time generative AI image was available anywhere, really, not just WordPress. So that was exciting. So I went to ground for a week or two to like turn that into like a like mini product and get the plugin pushed and released and stuff like that. So that was the start of Imagine AI, which was kind of the first AI WordPress thing that I had built. Unfortunately, it turns out people don't want to pay for that.
And so this is still while you're at WPMU days, and they were just like cool about you going off and doing this sort of plugin. How did that dynamic work?
Yeah. Like at first it was hard. I mean, James Farmer, the owner there, he was super cool, like super supportive. Like he has like a bad boy public personality from the past, but really he was always super good to me and yeah, supportive. Like even as I was like trying some of these things out, it's like, yeah, you know, go for it. We still have a place here. So I was able to experiment and iterate. And ultimately over the course of 6 months, 8 different kind of AI projects, you know, just for fun. And it was the last one, DocSpot, that really took off and found a really good niche and use case for businesses.
It's a really good strike rate, you know, 8 to 1. It's definitely better than a lot of the solopreneurs that I see. But perhaps all of your kind of historic product stuff gave you a bit of edge here in terms of being able to get stuff to market.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, having so many years of experience building products already, you know, that do millions of dollars in revenue, I think that definitely helped in learning things. But still, I was a developer at heart. So like actually running a business and growing a business and learning marketing and sales and all that stuff, the last few years has been like a huge learning thing for me beyond just technology. So it's been a challenge. I've enjoyed it though.
Let's try and line up a bit of structure now. We kind of caught up to here. So I'd definitely like to give you the opportunity to introduce DocSpot, you know, what it does, why people pay for it, what you hope to do with it down the road. I'd like to then talk about that journey that you just talked about there, you know, from an employee, like even if a sort of senior one, through to the sort of solopreneur culture and journey. And I've watched a few people going through that. I definitely find it kind of exciting and compelling and daunting. So I'd love to hear what that was like for me. And then I'd like to hear what you are excited about next. You know, is it just total focus on DocSpot and what you want to do with that? Are you starting to kind of look around, seeing other technologies come online, or is it all AI all the time for you? So yeah, I guess any of those in any order, but I think we talked about DocSpot a bunch, so it'd be good if you just introduce the product, what it does, and why people should use it.
Yeah, so late 2022 was when ChatGPT was released, and that was kind of mind-blowing to everyone, right? And a lot of people had the immediate thought, like, how do I use this for business? You know, like, what is, like, okay, like, the first thing everyone does is, oh, write me a poem or a rap or something, you know? Content creation, which is, I think, the most basic use case for this generative AI technology. But I started learning about something called RAG, which is retrieval augmented generation. So the first thing people realized was that, yeah, you know, they'll ask it about what's the worst best WordPress plugin, or tell me about how do I change the setting in WooCommerce, you know, and often ChatGPT, yeah, it had some knowledge in its training data, but it's not grounded in any kind of fact. So these models will happily hallucinate, is what it's called. They just confidently make up answers because they want to make you happy. Because they're not really thinking necessarily internally about what you're really asking. So this new technology kind of was starting to, some people were experimenting with it, called retrieval augmented generation. And basically what that does is imagine that you take like a document about how to change that WooCommerce setting, and you paste it into ChatGPT, and then you ask a question, how do I change this setting, right? And instead of reading the whole document, the AI is actually able to ground itself in that text that it just read to summarize or provide a custom or succinct answer that's grounded in fact. And so I was thinking about, oh, like this is like really cool. This could be super useful for like customer support or things like that for businesses. And of course the whole chat interface, like that was completely new. Like everyone was like excited about that, being able to chat back and forth in a conversation style with a bot. So I kind of experimented with some of that, and I ended up building, it's called ChatWP, and that's still online. And basically I just crawled like all of WordPress.org, like all the support documentation and developer documentation. And then I imported that all into a vector database and kind of created like a front end and launched that as just kind of a free tool for the community. So where they can ask like questions about WordPress that are grounded in all the support documents. And then I had the forethought to put at, right underneath it, is this something you're interested in for your business? And that just collected an email address, you know, for a wait list. And I made a little like survey that's like, okay, here's a, like some potential features. What would be like the most important for you to have, you know? So that kind of went, I wouldn't say viral, but it was kind of like the first like use case of that, like WordPress and that kind of ChatGPT chat type model stuff.
So you went really lean here.
And so a lot of people used it. A lot of people got excited about it.
So you went very lean, you know, like the,
yeah,
here's a prototype. Tell me what you'd like. And then you went off and built it.
Yeah, exactly. So once I saw like the popularity of that and that there's a lot of like, I mean, it's mainly like WordPress business owners that were adding on the wait list and things like that, that it's like, all right, I think this is somewhat validated as maybe one of the first like practical use cases for like a B2B for generative AI. And I spent probably 3 or 4 weeks building like an MVP and launching it and productionizing it, you know, into something that, and that's not easy. Like this technology was new, like even vector databases and things like that. They were not designed for that kind of scale to where you have multiple libraries, you know, training data for lots of different bots instead of just like one giant one for your business. So definitely a lot of learning, a lot of back and forth, bug fixing, all that kind of stuff. And, but yeah, it kind of took off. Like at first it was like slow. I had the wait list to send it out to and a number of them, you know, were trying it out and signing up. And then I got really lucky somehow. Some Japanese Twitter influencer found it, I don't know, from my tweets or something, and tried it out. And he just recorded like a video of like creating a chatbot in Japanese and showing that, yeah, this technology can work for languages other than English. And that went like hugely viral in Japan, Japanese tech Twitter. And so I just started getting like, I woke up in the morning and I was like, what is going on? Like my servers are crashed and I had 100 support tickets in Japanese.
Amazing.
No, it's like, oh man.
Pinterest thoughts.
What is happening? So yeah, so that week was...
make sure you're not dreaming.
Exactly. So that week was crazy, just figuring out all that, getting things stable, adding like the basic, because this was raw MVP. Like there's no way to delete your data, no way to change your email address. You know, there's all those annoying little things that you need like in a product that I just held off on because I was trying to do as easy as an MVP as I could. Although I probably could have made it even leaner. I think each product I built, I learned more and more like, oh, this could be leaner. This could be leaner. And that's very important. But yeah, so that was huge. And also made me kind of focus on a new niche to where I had to build kind of first class tools for multilingual support. And a lot of my competitors, there's just a few that came out at like within a matter of weeks of me too. Because when this was released, it was literally like days after the ChatGPT API became available.
Yeah, you were very fast on this.
Yeah. So like actually when I was building the MVP, I was still using the old GPT 3 chat API, which was like, people don't remember this, but it was literally 100 times more expensive. So yeah, so that was exciting. And since then, just been growing and doing that. And I eventually transitioned to doing this full time in the spring, last spring.
And unlike a lot of, so I follow a bunch of the kind of solopreneur, you know, Peter Levels types on Twitter and living around the world, doing kind of cost of living arbitrage and doing all this stuff. You're in quite a different place from what I understand. Certainly last time we caught up.
Yeah.
You know, you're a pastor, you're deeply embedded in the community, you have kids, you have a house, you're not packing everything you own into a rucksack and setting off to Bangkok for 3 weeks to go and build something. This was a different sort of transition than, you know, young, free, single, sleep on a sofa kind of solopreneurism that you see a lot of. So that must have taken a bit of courage, that conversation with your wife and your boss and everything else. I imagine you handled it well, but it must have been non-trivial for you.
Sure. Yeah. And I joke about that too. Like most people, like the startup life, they think, okay, you're going to burn away, like, you know, your 20s, maybe your 30s, grinding, you know, for the VCs or whatever, and trying to build something. And maybe if you're super lucky in the 1%, you become a billionaire or whatever. But, and then eventually you settle down and get married and have kids and all that kind of stuff. I kind of did it the opposite way. You know, I got married at 19, had kids young. My kids are all, I got two in college and one's a senior in high school. So now I'm able to like put that time in and that grind in on the other end, I guess, which is good. But definitely, yeah, it's a huge mindset shift. I was probably your best employee, like faithful, loyal, would never complain, you know, that person that's always there, seeing a problem and figuring out how to fix it and solve it, being self-directed and that kinds of thing. And that was kind of my role as CTO. And I know that my former boss, James Farmer, really appreciated the time and stuff that I put in there. And he was so supportive. I mean, it was scary to kind of take that step and say, here's kind of what I'm thinking. I feel like this is kind of the next phase of my life. I don't know how it's going to work financially or anything. I just want to try some stuff, you know, part-time and see if it takes off, you know. But he was super supportive. And even just my transition away from there was very gradual. I had a good amount of time to train up like a number two person that could work alongside me, you know, and then even after that, when it's like, okay, I'm going to like step down from CTO, they still have me on as an advisory role part-time for almost a year just to make sure that transition was smooth and everything. And that was a huge blessing as well. So nothing but good things to say there, but definitely is a huge step and huge. It's a very different stress, like owning a business, running a business versus being an employee.
Whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on, because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results, all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org. As a builder or an agency managing multiple sites, check out Hostinger.com. Their infrastructure brings your client's site speed, uptime, and security. Also, at your fingertips, you'll find a powerful suite of tools for security and performance, code and content management. Now add to that the ability to manage your WordPress website through WP CLI for control configuration and plugin updates, enhanced WordPress acceleration powered by Lightspeed Enterprise, control over auto updates, free migrations, and of course, the essential staging sites. Through all of their services and features comes e-commerce optimization for your clients' Woo shops. So when you think about it, overall, everything you need to keep your client sites running smooth can be found with their agency hosting at Hostinger.com.
And you've done the kind of build in the open thing, so I feel comfortable asking you about the financial side of it that you kind of touched on there. How is DocSpot going? Like, what are the revenues like? What are you planning to do with the business? Any of those questions, obviously, don't answer if you're not comfortable to, but just curious for your journey.
Yeah. Well, I've never been like super excited about like the VC route or whatever. I don't know, like coming from that, like being kind of the employee to being an owner, the biggest benefits of me wanting to do that was to have ownership, to have like full ownership, to not have bosses anymore, kind of have that freedom, like how hard I want to grind, if I'm going to be like dedicating every hour a day, or I just want to work. I mean, even with this like startup going on, like over the summer and stuff, there's periods where I literally took almost a month off and just like okay, I'm just going to relax. You know, I've got some employees that are helping with support or cover bugs, that kind of thing. But I'm okay taking a month off just to be with my family and chill. Even if that means that maybe I'm losing some growth to competitors or because I'm not doing every single thing I can. So I prefer that. I prefer to work like they say, like that we're designed to work more like a lion than a sheep. You know, sheep like graze all day and like what you classically do, you know, at a 9-to-5 job or whatever, that you're just constantly plugging away. And ultimately, I think that's less productive than if you can have focus times 1 to 3 months where you're just hardcore all in building things, making stuff happen. And then you're taking a month off to just go to the beach or whatever. And that's kind of how I've lived my life and making sure I have that purposeful time, family and kids, especially as my kids were younger. So I wanted to have the freedom to be able to do that and continue to do that, even as an entrepreneur. So it's kind of a conscious choice. So we're fully bootstrapped. We don't have any investors currently. When we first launched, and even to this day, still get a lot of investor interest, this field being the new technology is on fire. But I'm not necessarily opposed to that. Like if it's like a strategic thing to where not just money, but some kind of thing was like, I mean, if I can sell 10-20% of the company and this partnership is going to make it grow 2-3x, I mean, it'd be dumb not to do that. But I haven't found that opportunity yet, and just bootstrapped and staying profitable and that kind of thing.
I think that also leaves you with the freedom to make those sorts of decisions. And maybe that's a sensible follow-on question. It's, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about what's a kind of durable moat for an AI-powered business and what is just a ChatGPT wrapper that's eventually going to get rolled up into a more capable, you know, central product from the OpenAI team or Perplexity or Anthropic. Like, how do you think about DocSpot in that sense? Are you kind of just taking things day by day? It definitely doesn't seem like you're in the mindset of, you know, get out while the money's on the table. So How do you have a kind of alternative master plan, or is it just sort of keeping an eye on things and iterating away? How do you kind of strike that balance, I guess, between like tactics and strategy now that you've found PMF?
Yeah, well, it's definitely been, I guess, underlying fear, you know, like no one, even the best VCs, they have no idea how this is all going to shake out. But I think we're starting to see some patterns. And I think the patterns that I'm seeing is that the AI wrapper companies are actually going to be the only winners in all this, which is funny because it's not really the underlying technology. It's the execution of it for a specific like business niche. That's where the value is. That's where any kind of moat that you can build in AI, that's where it's going to be. At that, applying the technology to the niche for that specific business, then also tied into that marketing distribution. So yeah, there's definitely products out there that are better than mine. You have OpenAI or Anthropic or Google or whatever releasing things all the time that may like cut into my features. And that's scary. Obviously, I'm like, oh, is it just going to die tomorrow because this becomes free or whatever, or easy? But from what I've seen, there's power in the niches. And maybe it's not going to be like a $1 billion company or anything like that. But I think that it can definitely be a decent lifestyle company, at least for the foreseeable future, by building the specific tools that like businesses need or consumers need even for a specific niche.
So where I last heard you was maybe it's not going to be a $1 billion company, but who wants the stress of running a $1 billion company?
Right. Yeah. Maybe it won't be a $1 billion company, but I definitely think there's going to be an untold number of $100 million companies that are doing this kind of thing. And often lifestyle, often you're going to see profit margins that are unheard of. You know, you're going to have a team of 2 to 5 people that are running $100 million company, massive amounts of revenue per employee because so much can be automated now, all that kind of thing.
Well, maybe this is a good segue then. AI. I stayed with crypto and Web3 as my kind of primary interest. Obviously, I do my best to keep up with what's happening with AI, and I've done some build stuff, but more just for my own learning and certainly no product stuff. But one of the things that's happening at the moment in crypto land is the kind of AI agent meme coin thesis, where you're going to end up with an AI agent. In fact, I mean, there are, we're sort of seeing prototypes of this already, but the thesis is like somebody is going to spin up an agent and it has like a directive to go and generate a token that, and their only job is to maximize the value of that token. There's a couple that are kind of like that, but have a human in the loop to some degree or not. But the kind of that intersection between an agent having, I guess, enough intelligence, loosely defined, to go and pursue object to consume comments and feedback and to respond to those and to sort of have a dialogue with a community. And then the ability for it to have a different type of agency in terms of having a digital wallet that has funds that it has sole control over has been a kind of interesting one to watch over the last few weeks, I guess. And so where this segue is, I can imagine there's going to be teams of 2 to 5 people running $100 million companies. Like, are there also going to be AI agents who end up running these sorts of businesses? Because you don't have to do much in terms of like nesting and recursion to imagine that there's like a CEO bot who has a CTO bot who has a bunch of developer bots. And actually when they capitalize and have the ability to pay for infrastructure through that digital wallet, then, you know, sure, there are some advances that one might need to make in terms of capability and everything else. But do you think that's plausible, that we're going to see kind of entirely autonomous businesses succeed?
That's a good question. I have plenty of experience with these agents and things like that. It's hard for me to imagine them getting to that level. Right now, there's a lot of excitement around it. And even with the latest O1 type models, we're just very far away from that, like full autonomy. Now, you can build agents that are tuned to a specific task and that work pretty well, especially like the more you can guide them and have a set path for them to follow, then the more reliable they can be. So definitely you can do some amazing automation stuff no one imagined being possible before. And we're on the cutting edge of that. As a business owner, I'm trying to make like our business like AI first. Instead of thinking about who can I hire for this, like I think about what can I build to do this for me. I try to have that up first because there is so much potential there, so much that you can do, especially in marketing. And I've been doing the coding thing for years, the AI coding stuff. But as far as like a free agent that like has that level of autonomy, I think we have quite a ways to go. Without the human in the loop.
Yeah, I don't feel like we're ready for that world. So I hope it is a bit further away. But it's been interesting to watch at least the first sort of realizations or the first proto projects that are like that starting to show what could be possible down the line.
For sure.
All right, so if that's a bit too wild and a bit too far off, then tell me maybe what you are interested in terms of like where you see this technology going. Are you like just, as I say, sort of tactically iterating on DocSpot? What other things are you playing with?
Yeah. Well, first off, I don't think I ever described what DocSpot does. So let me start there. Basically, we allow like businesses to build and train a custom chatbot, and they can use that like for customer support, like tier one customer support on the front line, either through a chat widget that they can embed on their website or by connecting it to their ticketing system, Help Scout, to where it could write automatic replies or at least write a draft that your human employees can either send, approve and send, or slightly edit if they need to. And then we have a ton of businesses that use it like for internal kind of knowledge access. So there's a huge use case. You have these huge like standard operating procedures, big PDF documents, whatever, intranet site, all this data, and it's really hard to access it or to get like real answers to questions. And so a lot of our customers are actually just using this internally for support or a tool for their own employees. And then we have people using it just like for research, like in general, like personal uses, like they'll upload their directory of PDFs and they want to be able to ask questions of their documents, things like that, to extract information. And then, of course, there's content generation. People are used to using that, you know, on ChatGPT or platforms like that. But with this, you can have it trained. Like, we have one client that's like a ad agency in the medical, like, drug space. And so they have, I don't even know how many, like 50 clients, and they train like a custom chatbot on all the information about each of those clients. And so they use that internally, their marketing team, you know, to generate ad copy, generate copy for websites, social media, all that kind of stuff. So a ton of like practical use cases for business. And the biggest thing that I'm always working on and always building is we have to build the internal tools that businesses need to use this stuff. Cause yeah, you could build like a custom GPT or whatever, like on ChatGPT to do some of this stuff. But you need both the tools and APIs and stuff to be able to deploy that easily to your users or to your customers. So that's one side, is like deploying it in a way that's useful to them. And if you're doing it for customer support, you need that seamless handoff to human support. If it detects that they're getting frustrated or can't answer, you want to make sure that there's no gap in there between going from the AI to human. And then the other part is all the management tools on the back end. So you want to track chat logs of what your users are asking, figure out like topics, get reports about how well the bot is doing, how well it's able to resolve customer queries, all that kind of stuff. So day to day, I'm often working on those kind of features, just adding on to that, the tools that users need. One kind of fun thing that I've been playing with is have you played with the advanced voice mode in ChatGPT at all?
Advanced voice mode, like the real-time kind of chat.
Yeah. So that's a new model that OpenAI released, to where before, if you wanted to do voice, you'd have to convert it to text and then pass that into the model. And then the text that creates, you convert that back into voice again and play it to the user, right? So there's a lot of latency there. Just was not a good user experience. And this new model that only OpenAI has, one of these, is where the model literally takes voice input and it puts voice output. There's no like text in between at all. It's just voice tokens to voice tokens. And so there's almost no latency there in responding. And so for the first time, we're able to create things that are voice-based, whether it's like phone-based support, or you have a sales agent that goes out and makes cold calls for you, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of possible with these APIs. And since they launched that API like a few weeks ago, I've been playing with how we integrate that into DocSpot, you know, so it understands your business and so it can perform those kind of tasks, voice-based customer support. So that's been kind of fun to play with. It's working pretty well right now. The main problem is costs. It's still super expensive API. It runs 30 cents to a dollar per minute to run it. That's fun.
Even then, for such a kind of groundbreaking technology, is what the true cost is, but like the end user cost isn't so insane.
Yeah, it's still probably cheaper than hiring like an SDR to make those initial calls or whatever, that kind of thing. So yeah, figuring that out. And prices are going to come down. That's another thing that's been great to be in this industry. I mean, we've seen, gosh, just since I launched DocSpot, I've seen probably 100-fold decrease in costs. Like if you compare costs to compute power or knowledge power, you know, of these models, like it's been more than 100x decrease, which is crazy, in 2 years. So that's like an exponential decrease in costs. So I'm glad I'm in the wrapper business and not the model business, because there's no money in that.
Well, I guess one way to look at it is, you know, look, if the models have done 90% of the work, then there's only 90% left of the work to do for the wrappers.
Right.
But I feel like the core model stuff is approaching national security kind of level of importance. I was at quite an interesting podcast with a guy called Leopold, OpenAI guy, and he was talking a lot about this, you know, like what happens when you get up to the $1 trillion data center, and can the US state afford to have like OpenAI or whoever go build these data centers in the Middle East? Or at what point do you have to start wrapping government's level of security and data and privacy around these things? So yeah, I don't know what the kind of end the end state is, or at least what OpenAI's future looks like. But it definitely feels that it's going to be different from the rack of businesses, which from hearing you describe it is as much about just being able to tailor that core technology into the existing tools, processes, and workflows that businesses have now. So it's kind of doing the awkward translation between the generalized and the specialized that doesn't scale to the point where, I don't know if I'll say more than that actually, but yeah, I'm pleased that you've found a niche that you feel it's defensible and you feel that there's like a lot of work ahead of you, a lot of value to create an offer. That's great.
Yeah, this is like people that are in this tech bubble, they feel like they're already feeling like their AI burned out or whatever. But what I'm finding or what I'm seeing is still like, they say it's what, like 10% of the population has even tried ChatGPT, much less know how to use it. And think about just businesses in the US only, if I only factor that in, like how many could use like an AI support bot? Probably a massive number. And we're probably even including all my competitors combined, even the giant ones like Intercom or something, we've probably only addressed 5% of the market. It's still a huge open sea out there, massive total addressable market for some of this AI stuff, like whatever the niche is that you're working in. So anytime there's like a new technology development like this, a new wave, like think back to the whole internet era and then the mobile era, when is it just two that I've lived through in my lifetime and just seeing that pattern repeat itself. Like we're kind of at that point right now where people are a little bit disillusioned, you know, or a little bit of the heat has died off of it. But now is when there's so many potential opportunities, both for creating company and also like integrating this technology into your existing company, or even as an employee, integrating into your workflows and stuff to make you more productive and to make you a more valuable employee. There's so much left to be invented, so much left to be deployed, you know, in practical ways to the marketplace. So it's exciting. I'm kind of a builder at heart. So like this business side of things, like the marketing and all that kind of stuff, that's been harder for me. But more recently, I think I've been having a lot of fun building free tools. So instead of like getting that itch, I need to build another product or something, like I'm building a ton of like free little like lead gen AI tools for SEO to get traffic leads to my site and business and things like that. I think I built like 20 or 25 in the last 2 months and actually taken huge amounts of search traffic too from that. Not the most qualified users. I'm trying to figure out how to convert them. Some of it's just education and exposure, but it's been fun building things like AI image description generator or transforming your YouTube video into a blog post, things like that. And there's so much you can do with AI and automation to build these kind of fun little tools. But something that would take someone forever to do, I can pump out two of these in a day, you know, using AI coding and that kind of thing. You know, like I'll build like a basic framework that applies to all of them and then just copy that single page app, you know, and just use AI to completely rewrite it to optimize all the SEO and content on it for the specific keywords I'm targeting, all that kind of stuff. And I can launch a whole new thing like in a day and then capture thousands and thousands of clicks per day from Google, which is amazing. And it's something I love doing because it's building.
I am impressed. I'm really enthusiastically pleased for you, the way that this journey has gone. Maybe it's a nice way to kind of bring this back to the world of WordPress and where I could ask you the last question, which is, we talked earlier, I said, you know, WordPress feels like my technology home. How has your journey with DocSpot and your other projects changed? Has it changed how you think about WordPress and Woo? Do you still think about them at all? How do you think this technology starts to have a larger impact on this ecosystem?
Yeah. So being like some of the first experiment with AI and WordPress, but definitely now I'm much less focused on that. Like I built kind of a B2B SaaS that is still my network. And a lot of my customers are like WordPress businesses. Big ones that you've probably heard of are using it like either internally or for customer support. So that's great. And making sure that I build the tools and things like that, that they need, but definitely have been a lot more out of the space, which has been nice to broaden my horizons in that regard and broaden my platform risk and different things like that, being able to apply to lots of different businesses and industries. But there has been some cool stuff that's going on. Like, I love following a friend of mine, James LePage, and he does the WP, like the agent stuff that he's been doing. I don't know if you followed that at all.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, but if you want to know like who the AI expert is in the WordPress space, that's definitely him. And what he's been doing, like, I think he started with, it was like Code WP or something like writing. It was like the first like site where you could write code for WordPress, and it was specifically like tune models and stuff like that. And now he's transitioned into a plugin that's like an agent for WordPress that can automate a lot of tasks for you, like in your WordPress management, things like that. But he's definitely staying on the cutting edge for that, like whether it's like fine tuning models, whether it's like scraping all of the WordPress.org repo and using agents to map out the setting screens of every single plugin so that the AI models can know how to navigate, you know, the WordPress dashboard. There's some crazy problems that they're working to solve there with WordPress. And so I love following that and seeing what they're doing there.
Thanks. I will drop him a follow. So he's James W. L. E. Page on Twitter. I'm sure Bob will stick a link to his profile in the show notes. Thanks for that hot follow tip. Appreciate that. And I hope that you will continue to think of Woo and WordPress. Our paths will keep crossing as we explore these new frontiers together.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for talking to me, Dave.
Always a pleasure, dude. And be well, and onwards to success and victory.
Thanks, you too.